All right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we're actually doing one of our director follow-up special episodes. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the creepy kid horror movie Z, which is out now on Shudder. And today I'm going to be talking with its director, Brandon Christensen. Brandon's from here in Las Vegas. I've known him for years now. And so I was really happy to get a chance to not only spotlight his film, but to get a chance to talk to him. And we have a great conversation coming up here on the episode. So if this is your first time listening to Piecing It Together, I do hope you enjoy it. And I hope you subscribe wherever it is that you like to listen to podcasts. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on TuneIn, we're on Stitcher, we're on all the major podcast apps. We're even on the one you're listening to it on right now. How about that? So you should subscribe. You could also follow us over on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show, as well as everything else happening in the world of movies right now. So Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, go join the group. We'd love to have you there. So, I think without any further ado, let's get into this conversation because we get into a lot of great inspirations and, you know, the movies that inspired Brandon, as well as movies that we talked about on the main episode and just talking about filmmaking in general. It's a great talk, so let's get into it. All right, so joining me today, we are going to be talking about the film Z with the film's writer-director Brandon Christensen. Brandon, how's it going, man?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm all right. I have been so super busy with just recording these podcasts and just everything that's been going on. How have you been doing? You seem to be on a little bit of a whirlwind with this movie and getting out there doing lots of press and stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. It came out at such a strange time for the world. So I think, it was a little beneficial for the film because a lot of people were kind of stuck at home and they had nothing to do. So I think when new stuff comes out, they're eagerly gobbling it up. And so I think, we saw early numbers of how the film did on Shudder, and, they were really good. Shudder was super happy with it. Mm-hmm. And just sort of it was a fairly sizable release just compared to, the last film I did where it came and it sort of had this, it had a longer period of time where people were discovering it, whereas this was kind of like hyper-focused right at the top. So it felt like a pretty serious release, which was fun to watch. But yeah, I mean, other than that, it's everything's been so strange. I mean, sure, I've got three kids and stuff, so there's never a shortage of things to do. It's just, trying to try and be creative or whatever during this time, because it's just, it can totally just sap your energy.
Yeah. And speaking of which, before we start getting into Z, you've been, you posted those short films and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the first month or so of the pandemic, I guess you would call it, I spent a lot of time just sitting and reading and just sort of wallowing in that feeling of despair that everyone's kind of going through, where you don't really have any answers and you're kind of just searching for anything. And then after about a month where it seemed like, okay, this is going to continue to go, I was like, how can I take advantage of this time? Because I think the worst thing would be if, 3 months later, 2 months later, even, you come out of it and you go like, I didn't accomplish anything,
Right.
It's like, totally. I stopped eating good. I stopped doing any sort of exercise because just sort of everything was sort of shaken. So I was just like, I need to do something. And I had these, this little script called Scaredy Cats that I wrote for my kids. I wanted to do last year and I just never got around to it. And, I was just like, you know what? I've got the gear. I've got the kids here. We're kind of locked in. We should give this a shot. And so I just, started shooting one night and realized quickly, like, okay, these kids aren't actors. This is going to take some time. And so every night for like 30 to 40 minutes, we would just shoot a shot or two and just try and work through it. And then eventually, I'd be cutting it as I go. And finally, I got it to a point where I was like, okay, this is good enough. And let's get it out there. And then that kind of led to another one. And I've got other ones I want to do, but I'm just sort of waiting to see what else. I've got a few things happening.
For sure. Yeah, no, it's been a very productive time for myself as well. It's like, yeah, you're either going to just sit around and do nothing, or you're going to make the most of it,
Right. Yeah, I think, Animal Crossing is you know, swept the entire world. It seems like everybody's got that going on. And I do imagine a lot of people will come out of this with a really nice village that they created, but I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's funny that you brought up Animal Crossing already, because I was debating whether or not to bring up what you've been playing on Nintendo lately, because I always see you on there whenever I whenever I turn mine on. So,
well, yeah, I don't play. I played a lot of Animal Crossing at the top, but my kids, they play it too, so they're playing most of the time. If you see me on there, yeah, they play a lot more than I do.
Yeah. So I got a couple quick questions, and then we'll get into some of these puzzle pieces that we talked about on the original Z episode of Piecing It Together. But first two questions that I was wanting to talk to you about. First of all, I mean, horror. I just wanted to see, is like, you've really kind of carved a path out in horror so far with your career. And I'm just wondering, is that a genre that really was something that you were looking to get into right from the get-go, or is it something you just, you know, kind of ended up in and now you're just rolling? Like, are you big on horror as a fan of it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I grew up, you know, always watching horror films. I mean, the one childhood memory that stands out the most was my parents allowing me to watch It, the Stephen King miniseries, back in 91. And I was 6 at the time, or maybe I was 5, not quite 6, but, you know, that show just like haunted me for years. And so my entire childhood until I was in the 8th grade was just sort of plagued by this recurring nightmare of Pennywise living in my brother in my closet. So it was just like, there was always this sort of layer of fear underneath everything for me. And that would always, you know, on Halloween every year as a family, we would watch a horror movie and stuff like that. And so it was always just something that was, it's not like I was like crazy about it, but it was always present, you know. And there's just that feeling, that visceral feeling of being scared, that I think is so much fun. And so, you know, when I started doing short films like 10, 11 years ago, and I definitely leaned into horror for that too, because I think, especially in the short film world, you know, horrors can often be so gag based, and short films are also the same thing, because you just sort of have this one idea. Like, you think about Lights Out, which is like the perfect horror short film, because it's so short, it has this one gag that works perfectly and has a good payoff. So it's just like, it's fun to just sort of take these little ideas and make it a little cinematic package around it, and just, you know, to try and sort of practice and figure out your craft. So when I was looking to do a feature, it always seemed right to do horror for me. And I don't know if that's where I'll continue to be forever, but you know, the horror community as a whole is super inviting and super, you know, nice to be around and stuff like that. That's I think, you know, there's a lot more like genre buffs and other things like drama films and comedy snobs that are just like, oh, that's not funny, and it's so subjective. Whereas with horror, I think, you know, it's most of the time anyways, it's either scary or it's not. And even if it's not, you can appreciate sort of the artistry there. That's why like a lot of the makeup effects, you know, from like The Thing or something like that, they hold up so well because there's so much passion put into it. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just one of those things that I was always around. My dad was a big Stephen King reader, so we had all the books, and I've read a lot of the books, and it's just something. I just like the idea of telling a scary story, that also has a good dramatic and, you know, emotional weight to it.
Yeah, sure.
And that's kind of one of the things that I try and do anyways.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like that about the passion that a lot of people in horror seem to have for their craft. And that's the thing I think that stands out the most about the genre, is that, you know, the people who are doing it, they love it, and they are the fans themselves. You know, I think that's great. The other thing I wanted to ask you before we jump into some puzzle pieces here is, you know, we're obviously both Vegas people, and coming up as a filmmaker here in Vegas, I'm just wondering if you could maybe talk for a minute about that. And, you know, obviously there's not a lot of filmmakers that have come out of Vegas and, you know, made a big, big splash, but, you know, your film is getting a lot of attention right now. How has it been, a good thing, a bad thing, coming from Vegas and, you know, working around what Las Vegas is as far as a film city?
I've been here about 12 years now, and it's like, the first film I ever worked on was It Stands the Sands Red, which I produced for Colin Minahan and Stuart Ortiz. And it's a weird situation. Vegas is kind of just like this place in the middle of nowhere that nobody really thinks about being a film town. I mean, we're pretty close to LA, which is cool, and so you can get there if you need to. But you know, there is sort of this community of filmmakers here. Like, you've got your Kelly Schwartzes and your you know, your Michael Mahal and Sonny mm-hmm. Mahal that have their, you know, endless movies coming out and everything like that. So it's, there is like a community here. And it's sort of small, but there it is very tight knit. And so, I mean, what I wasn't really into films until, you know, the last 5 years or so, but before that I was doing commercials and I was, you know, working with a lot of kids from UNLV and stuff like that. And the talent coming out of there was just, you know, it was pretty great. Like there's a lot of talent. A lot of them unfortunately do move to LA after, you know, after sure, a year or yeah. two, because I mean, that's generally where the film, you know, if you want to work in film, that's a good place to be. But, you know, I've got a family, I've got kids, I've got a mortgage, all this stuff. So I've kind of just tried to carve out my own little thing where I can work from Vegas. And the two movies that I've directed, they've both been shot in Canada where I'm from.
Right. Right.
So it's just kind of like, I'm able to do a lot of work here still. And then like, I've got a film that I'm trying to shoot this fall and I'm going to shoot in Vegas, which is going to be an interesting experience. But it's just sort of, it's, you know, it's a nice place to live. It's a kind of like a sneaky place, cause there's a huge community, not just film people, but video people and stuff like that, cause of the events and all that stuff. And, one thing people don't really realize is that the cost of living in Vegas is so low. You know, when you compare it to somewhere like California, there's no state tax. The rates for things like that, because it is a lot of business coming through, they're still very high. So, I mean, you can make a very, very comfortable living just like being a camera operator or something like that in that sure. corporate space. And, you know, that's how I kind of started, was just getting, you know, gig work through that stuff and just sort of getting comfortable before I was able to say, you know what, I'm going to take a risk and I'm going to jump onto this project and spend the next 3 months not making any money so I can make a film. So I think, you know, Vegas is pretty unique for that, where there is a ton of people, especially in the commercial and corporate world, where they, you know, they all love to do this stuff and they make a good living doing it. You know, I'd love to see more film people stay here and do stuff, but I, you know, when you look at things like tax credits and stuff like that, it doesn't really make a ton of sense a lot of the time. I mean, that's why we went to Canada for Stillborn, because we had such right. a low budget that we could take advantage of tax incentives where we couldn't here. Like even the one I'm doing now, like the budget's going to be far lower than the threshold that Nevada has. So, you know, I think there's a lot of good people here. I'm friends with a lot of them. And it's just, you know, it's nice to see sort of the growth of filmmakers as they continue to make stuff.
Yeah, for sure. It's always great, you know, when something comes out of Las Vegas or out of somebody like yourself, even though it wasn't shot here, somebody who is a part of this community, it's great to see. So let's get into some of these movies that we talked about on the episode. So, of course, these are things that we thought maybe might have had some bit of inspiration for you in coming up with Z. And I'm not going to go through all of them, but I'm going to pick out a few and get your thoughts on them. And then we'll see if there's any major ones that maybe we missed on the episode. So first one, the guest for the episode was film critic Josh Bell, who used to write for The Weekly. And for he has his awesome movie or podcast and all that, and he mentioned Ari Aster and Hereditary, which I thought was a wonderful thing to say, a nice compliment for you.
yeah, that was nice of him. Ari is, you know, in another stratosphere from me, and he's, you know, justifiably so. He's incredibly talented, and he's a great writer and everything. So it's you know, it's cool to just anytime that someone can bring that up. But I do definitely think Hereditary was, you know, it's not really a full inspiration because that movie hadn't come out yet when this script had started. And so, but I mean, a lot of the things, like I did use it as a reference for Keegan Connor Tracy when I was just like, one of the big things from the top was, hey, like, don't be afraid to be ugly, you know?
Right.
Like,
right.
And then you pull up this frame of Toni Collette, just like terrified. And it's not an attractive photo of her, you know, but it's so iconic because it's just like, it's so real and visceral. And I was just like, this is what you need. You need to just like, don't worry about your looks, like whatever, you know. People are ugly when they're dealing with stuff. And so that was definitely something that I was on. I was like, you have to watch this movie because it handles family trauma really well. Like, you know, that the whole, the first act break when whatever happens to Charlie happens and the reaction immediately after, you know, like that's the best filmmaking I think he's done. And then he kind of followed it up with Midsommar. The opening of that film is also just, it's a very similar thing, and it's incredibly haunting. And just like, it's so stylistically done, but still true to the emotion that he's trying to do. And so I think that, you know, I think he's like top of the, you know, top of the line grief filmmaker.
Yeah, for sure. So another one, keeping in line with that, is The Babadook.
Yeah, this is one that I mean, I had seen and I enjoyed, and it was never really an inspiration, and I didn't really think about it until after people had started watching it and being like, oh, it's another The Babadook. And I was just like, oh, you know, I guess, you know, it is very similar how it has a lot of stuff like dealing with grief and dealing with depression and sort of the monster itself kind of being a metaphor for something else. It, you know, it does definitely share some similarities. I will say that when we were kind of trying to come up with the creature design for Z, there were conversations like, okay, the Babadook is super iconic. It has the hat, it has the silhouette that you can identify, you know, the artwork and stuff. You know what it is when you see it because it's so unique. How do we do something like that? And the problem is, like, I'm not a great artist and we have no money to hire great artists. So it ends up just, you can't really go with that really theatrical approach where it has these flourishes and these things. So you give it identities in other ways, like 2% milk perhaps. And, so like beyond sort of monster design ideas, it wasn't ever, you know, talked about too much, but I will say, like, when you're writing a script for an 8-year-old, you do worry that you're going to have the Babadook child actor performance, you know? So, cause I mean, as great as that movie is, that kid is incredibly annoying. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of put off by that because he's always screaming and, you know, it's kid actors. They're terribly, they're very hard to work with. So when writing dialogue and stuff like that, it was very much about keeping it simple and keeping it smaller. And, like, you know, you want to mitigate as many chances for something to not land because of a performance. And we got super lucky because Jet was able to do it all. Like, there's nothing in the film that I kind of cringe through where I go like, ah, crap, you know, it's kid actor. And you know, that goes all the way to just him being on set. Like, he was never just a kid actor. He was always just Jet, the actor, because he's very polished. He's been in a million things. Mm-hmm. So we got super fortunate with him. But that, you know, it's always the fear. I mean, if we knew ahead of time that Jet was the kid, he probably would have had a lot more, you know, the Sixth Sense type lines in there just to, like, right, give him the opportunity. So, but when you're going, you're just like, okay, we're on a path. We have to follow it.
Is a challenge like that something you enjoy and look forward to?
No, I mean, it's terrifying because, I mean, when you're doing an indie and you're doing a small budget film, you're trying to keep the amount of fail points to a minimum, you know, like, you don't want to, you're not going to write a film like Z and then all of a sudden you jump to Air Force One and there's, like, bad guys and guns. And you're just like, you just don't do that because you don't have the budget or the time or anything like that. You have to keep things very small. So, you can have your little set piece opportunities, like going to an indoor play place, or you can, like, go to a train yard. So you have these moments, but yeah, you're definitely just trying to limit the amount of headaches that could exist. And that all started from when we worked on It Stains the Sands Red. We were shooting like an hour to 2 hours outside of the city every day. So you wake up extra early, you drive for an hour to 2 hours every day so you can get to your location, and then you're shooting for however long you can till the sun goes down. And then you have to drive an hour to 2 hours back, and then, you know, the cycle repeats. And so when we went into Stillborn, it was like, how do we do the opposite of that? Let's do it in a house where we don't have to drive anywhere. It's just like, you know, it's very comfortable. And so, yeah, you're definitely aiming for a more comfortable shoot. And so, you know, adding things like a kid and stuff like that is a risk that is kind of terrifying to get into. And it's just one of those things that you just have to deal with. We just got super lucky with Jet because he was never really a problem.
Well, speaking of kids, The Omen.
that was a big thought for me. I mean, with Stillborn, we had just come out of the parent, like, the newborn phase with our second son. And so after that had released, I remember I was in Overlook and I was sort of just, like, walking around the hotel and the film festival, Overlook the film festival. And I was just sort of walking around the hotel and just like, what can I do next? Because that's what everybody asks when you release something. It's not like, hey, let's talk about this. It's, what do you got next? And it's just like,
oh, yeah,
I just spent two years of my life to get you this. And now it's, you want something else. So, you know, I'm just like walking around and I started to think of The Omen. I'm just like, okay, well, I'm coming up to those years. I've got a 5 or 6 year old and it's what in that age range is something that I can, you know, sort of draw from my own experiences as a parent. And it wasn't until a little bit later that the idea of an imaginary friend came out from conversations with my wife. But it was definitely kind of like, okay, creepy kid, The Omen. How do we do something kind of new on that? And that was definitely like the beginning of Z for sure.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, we'll, I'm sure, get into more creepy kids as we're continuing to talk here, but I'm going to jump around a little bit and I'm going to go, we could have brought up, I think, you know, a few different modern horror series. The one that I brought up on the episode was the Insidious franchise. I was wondering what you thought about that as far as an inspiration. I thought maybe a little in like creature design, stuff like that.
I think I like the Insidious movies. I mean, I like the first two. I think they've taken that franchise a little too far. But the first one I remember being incredibly scared of. I think, you know, that was kind of, I feel like James Wan really coming out and being like, hey, everybody, I can make some super scary stuff. Because, you know, Dead Silence was fun and Saw was great. But it didn't have that just sort of relatability for just like a general audience like Insidious did. And I think just marketing and the score and everything on that was this, it was kind of unique for the time. And it just added to this, like, this movie is going to make you crap your pants. And I think, I don't know. I mean, I will say there's one scare in this film that a lot of people do draw comparisons to later in the film. It's in the trailer. But that is definitely an Insidious type of move, because that's kind of like always brought up as like one of the best jump scares ever, is the plane, you know, middle of the day, out of nowhere, just like horrifying image behind someone. It's hard to escape that when you write something like that in the film. It's like there's only so many ways you can do that, because when you're working with perspectives, like you've got two characters talking from one another, you're only seeing what they see. So Inevitably, if you have someone behind them, it's going to draw that comparison. And it's not a bad comparison to make, because, you know, it's definitely something that we talked about as well. But that movie, you know, it's a creepy kid film as well. I mean, the kid is sick for most of the film, so it's not like he's on the forefront of it. But I think actually both Stillborn and Z are both kind of influenced from that film, like, you know, following Rose Byrne's character and just sort of the mom that's dealing with so much. I think, you know, that's definitely influencing these films.
For sure. Yeah. Well, I'm going to just go with one more, I think, and then we'll get into anything that maybe we missed on the episode. But, you know, it's kind of inevitable with a imaginary friend to bring up Drop Dead Fred.
I don't honestly think I've seen it. If I have, it's been forever that I don't remember any of it. I do know there's I don't know if you know the podcast, How Did This Get Made?
Sure, yeah.
It's like Paul Scheer, and yeah. They did an episode about that, and it was kind of one of their classic ones, because the hosts, like June and Paul and Jason, they didn't agree about what it meant and what it was. And so it's really funny to listen, like it's, to just listen to them, you know, discuss it. And inevitably when you have an imaginary friend movie, I guess that's sort of like the touchstone one that everyone kind of thinks of, because there's another film that came out shortly before Z called Daniel Isn't Real. And, it had the same comparisons. And I know Adam, the director, and he's definitely dealt with the same question a million times. Like how much of this was influenced by Drop Dead Fred? And it's like, I don't think anyone thinks about that. I just think it's kind of like the group mind. Like when you go on Reddit or something like that, and there's like the top comment is always usually your first thought, because it's just very obvious. You know, it's always the obvious first thought that you have. And so it gets there and you just go, oh, wow, I thought of that. And, you know, it just sort of perpetuates itself. So I think, you know, when Adam went into that script, I don't think he was thinking about Drop Dead Fred. But ultimately, because Drop Dead Fred is kind of the one everybody thinks of, they're going to ask that. Yeah, there's stuff that I get compared to that I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't even think of that. Like, apparently Paranormal Activity 3 has a very similar plot line, too. And I've seen that movie, so maybe subconsciously I knew. But I'm like, what? I've asked people, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, which? I have no idea. So it's, you know, that's one that I guess we were influenced by just by, you know, doing the imaginary friend, but it definitely wasn't on purpose.
Sure, yeah. And I to be honest, I don't even remember the movie either. Right. I'm sure I saw it back in high school or something. Sure. And, you know, it's just, it has to come up. But yeah, so that Paranormal Activity 3, I don't recall the plot of that one, but maybe. But I guess let's move on to any movies that were a major influence for you that maybe we didn't bring up on the episode.
Yeah, I can't remember if you brought these two up, but these were ones that the first draft of the script my wife and I wrote, and then Colin Minahan joined after the first draft, and we kind of reshaped a lot of stuff. And the whole third act was, you know, was born there. But two of the films that we were referencing, actually, there's three. One was Orphan. With you know, Peter Sarsgaard.
Sure.
That's it, like, it has very similar, some very similar story beats in it to Z. It has sort of like the drive home when something bad is happening. You know, that was definitely heavily influenced by that. With Peter Sarsgaard, I won't spoil that movie, but he's at home alone with the orphan girl, and the mom knows something's up, and she's trying to tear home. And, you know, theirs is the much higher budget version because they have like full highway chase stuff happening, whereas we have me and one of the producers with the camera driving on the streets of Calgary alone after production. But that was definitely one. I mean, just the whole idea of bringing, you know, something being brought home, whether it's imaginary or an orphan child that you adopt, and it just sort of terrorizing everything and just sort of revealing different secrets in the family that have been kind of bottled up. Like there's sure. alcohol issues, there's infidelity in that film. And they would have probably been okay had that orphan not come in. So it's kind of that, it's like the house of cards. Everything looks right. So pretty, but then you add this one card that causes the whole thing to collapse, and it's fun to watch that. So that was definitely one that it wasn't really as inspirational from any real sense, but we did watch it a bunch of times just to sort of, to see how kids could act together. And it was The Good Son with Elijah Wood and Macaulay Culkin.
Sure.
That movie holds up very well. It's crazy to watch. I don't know if you've seen it recently. It's really funny because the credits are in Comic Sans, and it's you know, if you know the movie, it's a very dark movie.
Yeah.
But the music, like when you listen to the score at the beginning and the end of the film, it feels like a Disney coming of age film, and then it has Comic Sans, and you're just like, there's tonal opposite thing that's happening, and it's just very kind of strange. But in between those, it's a really great movie, and I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but it was when we were doing this. And just watching how the kids sort of acted and how natural with it. I mean, they were so good. It's crazy to have a film of that scale be anchored by two kids that were like 10 and 12, I think they were at the time. But they totally, I mean, there's like one bad line by Macaulay that stands out a lot. But other than that, like those two guys, they crushed it. And then the third one was The Ring, which I'm a huge, huge fan of. Just the idea of, I mean, there you can definitely see. Did you guys bring up The Ring when you did it?
You know, we didn't. And that's like when I brought up Insidious, for example, that's like another one of the modern horror franchises that I could picture being an inspiration on this movie. It definitely, I kind of feel like The Ring inspired a lot of the last 20 years of horror movies.
Totally. I feel like, I mean, that script and just the movie itself is such a great just like beat to beat, like that first 7 minutes, the opening with the two girls and the phone call and all that stuff. Like it's, you could take that away from the film and it could be a short film that stands up by itself. That's really good. And then, you know, just as far as cold opens go, I think that's probably the best one ever. And I've read the script and it's, you know, it's all there on the page. Like it's perfect. And so, you know, and then you immediately are introduced to the characters that you're going to follow and stuff like that. But you have all this information already that you don't need to really do a bunch of exposition on later because you pretty much understand the rules.
Sure.
But that film has a bunch of stuff like the young girl in the film when she has those interview tapes. Like we definitely were inspired by that when we did our interview with the little girl. Like we had her wearing a long white pajama set thing. Her hair is dark and long and just like the creepy girl thing. Was definitely kind of, you know, an homage to that. Like we called her, you know, it was the ring scene was basically her sitting in that room. And then just the whole thing about the investigation side, I think, you know, it's the box of plot is a very standard horror movie trope these days. I mean, even something like Hereditary has it where the character needs to get a bunch of exposition and she can't get it naturally. So she finds a box and it has the answers that she's looking for. So we have it less so in this. Stillborn had it for sure. It's a legit box. And then this movie had a box that she finds a videotape in, which is the plot that, you know, sends the story forward and stuff like that. But that whole idea of just like finding a videotape, watching the videotape, and you seeing like that's totally, you know, The Ring did that so well with the lighthouse on the edge of the screen and like, oh, I've got to go there. And then you cut to the big sweeping shot of her driving to the lighthouse. Like stuff like that was influential. And it's just my wife and I watched that a lot during the time to just kind of break it down as a film and be like, okay, so what's happening here? What's happening here? And then just to sort of get a feel for the ebb and flow of that story, because to me, I feel like that's like the perfect horror film. And it's not even that scary, which is funny, but like you think of it as being super scary. I remember seeing it in theater, and at the end when the TV snow happens, I was just like terrified by it. And then anytime you see that TV snow, you just like have that moment of pause. But when you watch it, it's very much just like a family drama. And it's like, it's very, you know, the music is very orchestral and it swells and it's beautiful. But there are these punctuating moments in the film where it is just like straight up horror. And those are the moments that kind of stick with you. But when you watch the film, they're not really the biggest pieces of the film at all. It's just the story is great. It's just, it's got a ton of intrigue.
Yeah, I think that's where I connect the most with a horror movie is when it is more of like, you know, some kind of a family story or there's something else going on other than let's just scare the audience for 9 minutes.
For sure. And I think that's why slasher movies and stuff, they're super fun, but maybe on like a commercial scale, they don't scale up as well as something like The Conjuring, where that can make a ton of money in theaters because a lot more people can relate to this idea of being home and being not safe, you know, whereas a masked killer is fun and it's scary, but it doesn't have that like instinctual fear that you feel like, you know, Paranormal Activity was such a great example of a film that just like, it just like perverted the idea of being home alone and feeling safe. Like all of a sudden you're not safe in your own home. And it's, you know, it's just this, there's just a feeling of being uncomfortable in the safest place you can be. And that's a lot of fun, I think, as an audience to live through, because everybody has those thoughts, you know, when they're home alone, they're scared of the dark, they're scared of whatever. And there's a reason for that. It's just because you just kind of get anxiety about being too comfortable, I think.
Sure. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you one other thing about the film itself. You mentioned earlier, I believe you said that when Colin came on to the script, is that when the kind of the major shift in the third act kind of came about in the idea? And where did that idea come from to like have such a big shift in the story at that point?
The first draft of the film, I would like the ending was the whole thing at the house where the husband dies and Z's on the wall and blah, blah, blah. And then sort of just like a brief aftermath of that. And it was kind of sloppy and lazy and it was a first draft. So it's always kind of just like you're figuring it out, but, it was never intended to go any further than that. And so Colin, when he came on, a couple of the biggest changes he made were we had two kids in it initially, like they had the older brother, the younger brother. And that was because I had two kids. And so I was really kind of doing that. And so we dropped the one kid, which makes sense. And, you know, it would have been impossible to have like a 1 or 2 year old, but, that was one. And then the biggest conversation that we had, and this was the hardest thing to crack for the whole thing, was just like, ultimately, I mean, we knew, you know, Beth having the imaginary friend when she was a kid and it wanting her back. That was always kind of the original idea that we had. But the question of why was the big thing. And it was just like, you know, in my draft, it was kind of like, oh, just because, I mean, there was a whole thing with her dad that it touched on, but it wasn't exactly the same. And there was no just like, there was the answer of how it came to be kind of thing, like with the dad dying and blah, blah, blah. But there was no like, what does Z ultimately want? And that was the big thing that we'd have. Like, we were just like constantly talking and just having these brainstorming sessions and coming up with the dumbest ideas. and eventually just those conversations led down the path of like, well, what if, you know, what if Z wins? And what if, you know, she has to move in with him and she has to pretend, because when she was a little girl, she made a promise that they would get married and have babies. And so we were just like, okay, that's interesting. And we went down this idea of like, okay, well, what if, you know, the film kind of starts where you're in Beth's point of view and you're watching, you know, her kid, and you don't see what her kid's interacting with. And then all of a sudden it shifts to the opposite of that, where Beth's acting like the little kid and we are almost like the parent and we don't get to see what she's interacting with. And so it came up, you know, it ended up sort of leading us down a rabbit hole of these kind of interesting scenes, like her giving breakfast to someone that's not there. And how, you know, just like filming that. And there's a scene that's deleted where she's standing in the doorway and like Z is watching TV, and it's a very abused housewife situation where she's just like scared of him and he's given a ton of power in the frame, but there's no one there. So it's like you're shooting a big, you know, a recliner and it's filling the frame and she's really small in the background and you're just like filming nothing, but you're giving it so much power in the frame, and you're like, just the audience is filling in the gap. Like, just you're like, oh, okay, Z's there. He's turned away from her, so he's clearly pissed off. He's just watching his TV because he's clearly pissed off, and she's just very scared of him. And scenes like that were just like, you're shooting a scene that if there was another actor, it wouldn't really be that interesting. But when you take out the actor and you still film it the same way, to me, it became very kind of interesting and fun as a filmmaker, because like, you know, you still do the same thing where we have coverage of Z in the chair when they're having breakfast and everyone's like, okay, quiet, everybody, we're filming, you know, and you roll on the camera and there's nothing there and you're just filming nothing. And it's just really funny. And it was really fun to kind of play around with that.
That's great. I love that. Well, I think that kind of covers it. We, you know, got into a lot of the inspirations and all that stuff. I, you know, got to ask you those questions. You know, one other thing, I was bringing up the IMDb page earlier, just so I could kind of take a look, and I Googled Z, and on the right side of the Google results was Jay-Z, American rapper, and on the left side was Z on IMDb, your movie.
Oh, nice.
And that's a pretty cool thing, I think.
I do wonder how much of that is algorithms playing with your, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, when it first came out, or when the trailer first came out, I checked, and like I would put Z in YouTube and the trailer would be near the top. And then people are like, I don't know, that could just be because you've searched it a lot and it's in your, you know, your browser history. And so I was like, okay. And so I got a VPN and I started putting in different countries and stuff like that. And like on half of them, it was still near the top. So I was like, I don't know, maybe it would be cool, because that's one thing that you see all the time, is that naming a film is like so important. Like, you want to get higher up in the alphabet, because the higher up there, the higher up that you're going to be in the alphabetical list. And so you'll see a lot of films, like local filmmakers I know of, they definitely lean up to the A's, you know, like one, for example, I remember the Mahal brothers, they did Party Bus to Hell. And then when the movie came out, it was changed to Bus Party to Hell because, you know, because of the alphabet. And so this was definitely like putting my middle finger up at that idea and being like, let's go to the bottom. Let's go Z, one letter, impossible to Google, and see what happens. And it actually seems to work out okay. But it is funny, the day that the trailer came out, Shudder wrote us, and they're like, we need a different title. And it was like, well, one, it's too late. Like, we can do whatever. And so if you look on YouTube, there's it's kind of split in half. There's some of the trailers are called Z Wants to Play, and some of them are just called Z, because they put out a press release and the trailer the same day. And the trailer that they put out was Z Wants to Play, and the press release, they changed it last second to just say Z. So there was like this confusion, and I was just very interested to see what happened, because when I put Z Wants to Play, it was everywhere and it was really easy to find. But when you do Z, it's kind of mixed. So I was kind of happy to see in the end, they just ended up going, you know what, screw it. And it stuck at Z, and it had, you know, it did well. So it's that was nice. But I'm definitely not a stranger to making films that are impossible to Google, because Stillborn with the slash, which seemed like a good idea at the time, terrible. you can't, you know, when you find stuff on Google, when you put up Stillborn, it's a nightmare. So it's definitely hard to find stuff about that film. And Z is thankfully doing a little bit better than that.
Nice. So whenever I have somebody on the show, I always like to end it by asking them if there's another movie they watched recently they'd like to maybe recommend to our listeners.
A movie that I watched recently, it's not terribly new, but it was very inspirational for kind of what I'm trying to do next, was a Green Room and with Anton Yelchin and Patrick Stewart and everything. That movie, have you seen Green Room?
Fantastic.
Yeah. I love it. Super good. I'm way behind on that in Blue Ruin, but I watched it in the last few months, and I've never been as anxious watching a film as I was watching that film. Just like the edge of your seat, butt clenched thing for basically the entire runtime of the film, because you know where it's going to go. You don't know how it's going to get there, but you understand the whole idea of being stuck in a small space where everybody wants to kill you. And just like, oh man, just watching the entire thing, it was just such a weird experience, because it's just, oh man, just straight up terrifying, because it's not ghosts, it's not demons, it's just a realistic situation, and it's asking you the whole time to sort of wonder for yourself, like, what would you do in this situation? And there's no good answers at all to that. It's bad no matter how you look at it. That and Don't Breathe was another one. It's not a new film again, but I was late on that bandwagon as well. And have you seen Don't Breathe?
I have. I think I bring that up way too often as a puzzle piece on this show.
Really? It's so good though. It's so simple. It's a, you know, basically one location thing, but the cinematography and just the presence of the house and how well you know it, because I mean, right off the bat in that movie, it does this great wonder where it kind of takes you through where the entire movie is going to take place as they're doing their home invasion. And so you really get a good sense of space in that. In that house, which is so important when you're doing these films, because you want the audience to sort of know where the nooks and crannies where either they can be safe or they can be in danger. And so, and then when you open up the basement and everything changes, it's such an interesting thing, because it's like, you know, it's such a small idea, like, oh, we go in the basement, and that's such a small thing. But when the basement has all this mystery in it and it changes so much of the story, that was really fun to watch, because the story is so tiny. It's this one, it's very similar to Green Room, where it's a very experiential thing. You're in a situation that you got yourself into, and now you're in a bad situation that you need to get out of, but there's no real good answer of how to do it. And, you know, the characters make choices that for the most part make sense. So there's never that, you're never being taken out of it by doing that whole, like, why? No, don't go in there. You know, you're
sure.
It's just a bad situation. And yeah, just the filmmaking, it's just incredibly tense too. So that was a ton of fun as well. I don't know why I don't have anything new, probably because nothing new has come out in the last 3 months.
It's been a little difficult. Yeah. There's been some stuff, but it's hard to find. You gotta keep your eyes open and look for it. But I love that those two recommendations, they kind of paint a little picture of where you're at right now with whatever.
Yeah, I guess so, for sure. Being stuck in a small space and just trying to get out and hoping that there is a solution. Yeah, that sounds about accurate for sure.
Well, Brandon, thanks so much for doing this. It was a great time talking to you, and I wish you absolutely more success like this. I'm really happy to see that people are connecting with the film.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great. I'm glad we got to do this. I apologize about last week. I got the COVID test on Sunday, and good. The more they go up your nose, and that's a whole nightmare on itself. It's like total recall. Oh, it's awful.
Yeah, I'll wear the mask for the next 5 years if I have to not have to subject myself to that.
Right. No fun.
Hello, welcome to the All Points West Podcast Network. This is Q. June is going to be huge for us. We're starting the month off with the launch of House on Fire, a podcast hosted by youth climate activists JP Mejia and Gabby Rodriguez, and presented in partnership with the Clio Institute and Unicorn Fire Radio. We're talking climate change from the front lines of the crisis, Miami, with the generation who has the most at stake. In their first episode, JP and Gabby talked to the co-founder of Zero Hour, Jamie Margolin, about how Generation Z is taking up the mantle for action on global warming and what it means for the near future. The first four episodes are up on June 5th, with more to come every other week, so be sure to subscribe, rate, and review now. Meanwhile, over on Awesome Movie Year, Jason Harris and Josh Bell are reviewing the year-end film 1996, including Swingers, Welcome to the Dollhouse, Bottle Rocket, Independence Day, and more. They've got some awesome bonus content they'll be releasing later this month, but you need to subscribe to find out what it is. And over on Entre Dos, Monica and Paula are getting deep into the world of language rights and how parents can push for better bilingual programs in their communities. So check it out by subscribing today.
All right. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Brandon Christensen. As always, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, we would love it if you'd subscribe wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. You can also rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser. I believe Stitcher's doing reviews too now. So wherever it is you listen, if they take reviews, review us. Maybe even give us 5 stars. We'd enjoy that very much. And you can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. Join the Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces. And make sure to check our back catalog of episodes. If there's a movie you've seen recently and we talked about it, I think you'd enjoy our conversations on whatever movies those are. We've done 130 of these things so far. Lots of episodes for you to go check out. We are always making more. We aim for 1 a week, but sometimes end up doing 2 a week. Most times end up doing 2 a week. I don't know how that ever happened to me, but yeah, I tend to make 2 a week, and you know, I enjoy making them. I love doing it, and I'm going to continue doing it. And if any of you out there listening ever want to join me for one of these things, I'm always looking for new co-hosts to join the show. We like to mix it up. We have back, you know, returning co-hosts all the time, but I love having new ones on as well. So if there's a movie coming out and you think you'd like to do the whole puzzle pieces thing with me, definitely get in touch. I'd love to have you on sometime. So I think that does it for today. I'm going to close this thing out with a piece of music like we always do. All right, I think I'm going to go with something off my most recent album, Beater, Original Motion Picture Soundtrack, which, if you're not familiar with, is the feature-length film Beater, which is coming out later this year, that I did the score for. It's got all the music from that film, as well as selections from a whole bunch of short films I did with the same director, Chris Johnson. And so I'm going to play something from one of Chris's horror movies to keep in line with this whole Z theme. And I'm going to play the track No Escape, which was from a short film called Daisy. And this is on the Beater Original Motion Picture Soundtrack. So this is called No Escape. And we'll be back with more Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.